Okay, thank you. Good morning, and thanks to the organizer for giving me the occasion of presenting this work here. This is a work developed during the last years in cooperation with different institutions in Italy. It's a project I'm coordinating called the Aneurysm Project, and is basically supported by Siemens Medical Solutions. And yes, Anne has nicely presented the problem of cerebral aneurysm, and from the, in particular, in the brain, and by itself, this is an interesting problem in terms of mathematics and fluid dynamics, in particular, for the relevance of morphology of these flow patterns. But we are, of course, interested more on the clinical outcome, and in particular, as Anne mentioned, the problem of rupture, or predicting the possibility of rupture in the aneurysm, because this is a real dramatic event, and at the moment surgeons do not know how to proceed when we detect the presence of an aneurysm in a patient. So we are trying to understand possible landmarks in terms of morphology and consequently of hemodynamics that could be used for predicting the rupture. There are some aneurysms that do not undergo to rupture for entire life, and other aneurysms that will do, and this is a dramatic event. So aneurysm is more focused on the role of morphology, but I have to mention that it is correct to think also to genetics, and there is another project by far huge than aneurysm called Aneurist, and is trying to understand the role of genetics and morphology in genetics. So we are more devoted on morphology, on the morphology side. So there are many different studies on cerebral aneurysm, Sebral in particular, the group of Sebral, Castro, Frangi, Lerner, then David Steinman published a very nice paper in American Journal of Neuroradiology, and all these papers and or studies or projects are using individual geometries obtained by images for computational fluid dynamics, and then analyzing the numerical results for understanding what happens in an aneurysm. So this is yet another CFT project. But I want to emphasize a little bit what I think is quite new in aneurysm. So this is the first X-ray images that has been obtained by Röntgen in 1895. This is his wife's hand. This is the ring. I don't know if his wife was happy in taking this image. But anyway, this has been in the medical practice has been a sort of revolution. Not immediate, of course, but since 1895, now images are currently used as an essential ingredient in clinical practice for diagnostic purposes. So now images are medical images are everywhere. So the question now is, can we retrieve more information from images than usually is done by medical doctors? Can we go beyond the image, and can images become a prognostic tool, not only a diagnostic tool? So this is these are the questions that are the basis of what I call the aneurysm perspective. Just to give a different example, these are images, SPECT images coming from a software called the Emory Cardiac Toolbox by Ernie Garcia at Emory. These are slices of the left ventricle. And at the moment, there is a project trying to connect the clinical situation that can be understood by these images to the literature, some annotated literature present on Medline, to have an automatic connection, just to find a semi-automatic way for connecting the current patient with the available literature. So this is sort of data mining for the images. And then, of course, starting from these images, you can obtain in, let's say, half a day, some images, some geometrical meshes for numerical simulations, and we have the problem of the fibers of the left ventricle, but at the end, in half a day, you can get some numerical results having a predicting role, basically, for understanding what happens in this patient with his left ventricle, which is not ejecting blood enough in the arterial system. So this is a connection between images, numerical simulation, and data mining. So in some sense, we can consider an image as the present. They represent the current situation, so we can manipulate and improve an image in many different ways. We can filter the noise present, of course, in the image. We can merge different images coming for the same subject coming from different techniques with the appropriate registration techniques. And then we can reconstruct the 3D geometry coming from 2D images. So this is the present. Then the past. The past, in some sense, is a connection of the current patient with all other similar patients that can be compared. So now huge databases are available, and they can be used for appropriate statistical techniques for trying to understand more by the comparison. And then, of course, we can predict. And predict means that we can add some more information coming from mathematical models and add numerical techniques for simulation. So the analyst perspective is, in some sense, the connection of all these different steps all together, working together. So what's new in aneurysm is this strong integration of different research lines. And then basically we decide to extend our morphological analysis not only to the aneurysmatic sac, but also to the vascular, to the entire vascular system in the brain. And so for this we needed to add some multi-scale or multi-domain computational fluid dynamics technique that has been addressed by Anne and also by Celine in the case of the lungs. So I will show you the different steps we have carried out for the three different parts of the system. This is the structure of the system. We are retrieving information from the hospitals. Mm-hmm. We are after a geometrical processing, we collect a database, and then we use numerical simulations and statistical analysis. About the geometrical reconstruction, we got 123 rotational angiographies from Niguarda Hospital in Italy. We developed a code that was already present. It's called Vascular Modeling Toolkit. We improved this code with Luca Antica and Marina Piccinelli. And so this is a summary of the three different steps. We identify a region of interest, we segment the image, and then we get a 3D model for suitable for computational fluid dynamics. So segmentation is not a trivial problem, because it can be strongly operator dependent. Just to threshold the gray level of the images can be not appropriate, and in particular strongly depends on who is doing this and the program in particular that can do this step. So we need a lot of smoothing. So we decide to use this active contours approach. Basically, it's a formal level set method where the contours of the images of the vast cells are obtained as the level set, the value f equal to zero of an appropriate, the solution of a proper partial differential equation. So at the end, this is an example. We see the image. We identify the vessel here. This is the gradient of the image, the difference between the three levels in of a pixel with the neighborhood pixel. And then this is what you get from the level set. You put some seeded point here, and then you solve the equation, and at the end you get the contour in a robust way. So these are examples of all the geometries, and you can immediately see that we have so many different situations in our, this is a giant aneurysm, and the aneurysm have different sides and at different position along the cerebral vasculature. So at the end, this is the entire data set, and in particular we focused on the at this stage on the internal carotid artery aneurysm. So this is again a summary of all the different steps. We get the 3D model. Automatically we identify what in a let's say mathematical sense center line for the vessels. Then we identify the radius profile. For instance, the color here is proportional to the radius of the vessel here. We identify the bifurcations. We automatically split the system into branches. From now on, this will be our reference point. The end of the carotid artery will be the reference point. So we associate the curvilinear abscissa to the system, and this is the origin, because we want to do some quantitative analysis about morphology. In particular, we investigated the length of of each segment, the curvature, the torsion, and many other different geometrical and morphological parameters. For instance, for the bifurcations, we used something that I heard also in some talk here. Basically, it's called the parallel transport technique. So we associate a vector along the center line. We move this vector parallelly along the center lines, and then we identify automatically the angles between the different bifurcations. So at the end of the vascular modeling toolkit process, we get some Excel tables with all these different morphological features. And the same for the vascular segments. So we associate to the curvilinear abscissa some curves, identifying the radius, the curvature, in this case, the torsion of the different vessels. This is the geometrical, the image processing, what I call the image processing of the project. A lot of mathematics is here. I just want to mention that, for instance, if you get some pixel-wise information, some pixel-wise, point-wise value for the center lines, then for computing the curvature, you need to regularize, of course, this information. You need to convert this point-wise representation to an analytical representation. And this can be not really trivial, so we resorted to quite new techniques called free nodal regression splines. Splines are curves with are able to ensure an appropriate smoothness to the function you are building, and smoothness is needed because we need to differentiate these curves for computing these morphological parameters, in particular curvature and torsion. This information is quite noisy. So we have noise, we want to filter noise, and we want to have curves that are smooth enough for differentiation. So at the end, we resorted to this algorithm. I don't want to give too much details, but if you're interested, I can, of course, give you also some references. And so this is what you get if you try to approximately differentiate the original point-wise information. So the second derivative, for example, is completely meaningless. So this is the information we get after our free node regression splines approach. And this has been processed for correlating, in particular, curvature to the morphology of aneurysm and then possible rupture. So at the end, the zero curvature point, this is the expression of the curvature. So you see that we need second derivatives, first derivatives of the coordinates. And the zero curvature point are used for identifying different segments in the carotid artery. So you see there is a sequence of bend, and each bend can be analyzed in order to understand its possible relation to the presence of the aneurysm. Well, this is another comparison with the different techniques, more classical technique. You can see that the free node regression splines are more regular. Another step needed in this pre-processing phase is to filter some possible variability in the patient. The patient has different sides, the device taking the image is slightly different position. So at the end, some variability is not really a substantial variability in the patient, but it comes from different unpredictable effects. So we need to register the different features. In some sense, we associate it to all this data. This is these are the different is the position of the center line, the first derivative, the second derivative for all the patient without any filtering. You see that the bold line is the average, and then the colored line are all different patients. So we need to filter this variability induced by external effect. We identify similarity index, and then we, in some sense, try to filter this noise. And so this is the same after registration. So the variability here is really significant, inherent to the morphology of the patient. It's not due to external effect, or hopefully. This is the same for the radius and curvature profile. So after all this process, we have been able to identify the different bands in the carotid, in the internal carotid artery. And for instance, we observed that there is a special band in all the patients we call the C-shaped band. And this is in agreement with an anatomical description. So for instance, what we found is, these are just the first results, is that ruptured aneurysm in the internal carotid artery are in a more distal position, are closer to the end of the carotid with respect to a ruptured aneurysm. This is the box plot of all the aneurysms. This is the curvilinear abscess associated with the carotid artery. This is the end of the carotid artery. And this is the middle position, the average position of the ruptured aneurysm. This is the average position of the unruptured aneurysm. So this means if, of course, I am aware that this is just on 65 patients, so this needs more validation, but this could be a landmark predicting the possible rupture of the aneurysm. An aneurysm closer to the bifurcation is more likely prone to the rupture than in a more proximal position. Another immediate observation is that ruptured aneurysm with respect to this C band are located a little bit distally with respect to the C band. The most part of the ruptured aneurysm are immediate in the immediate segment after the C band. This is another possible morphological landmark. And a third observation was to see that in each segment, I show you that there are different bands. With the ruptured aneurysm are closer to the peak of curvature in each band. So this is the distance with respect to the peak of the curvature for each band, and the ruptured aneurysm are close to zero. So they are likely close to the peak of curvature of each vessel. These were just the first result. Then we decided to try to figure out the classification of the patient. So we identified five classes based on the literature. For instance, these names are strange origin, so I don't want to go to give details about this name, but these are patients, for instance, these are the radius, this is the mean radius of patients with an aneurysm at the end of the bifurcation, the class of aneurysm that the device presented by Jean-Fred could be useful for. And then these are patients with sidewall aneurysm in the internal carotid artery. These are similar, but the aneurysm has a draining branching vessel. These are patients without any aneurysm, and these are patients with an aneurysm in the circle of Willis. It's not in the internal carotid artery, but is downstream. So we started thinking that these three classes of patients were more likely to be together, and these were together, no aneurysm in the internal carotid artery and no aneurysm at all. But then when we look at the mean radius, we realized that this was not the real, the correct classification, even if this is present in the literature. But in the literature, it's not considered the entire vascular system. It's considered only the aneurysmatic shape, the shape of the aneurysmatic sac. So for instance, it seems from here that we need to shift two classes, and the right classification is based on patient with an internal carotid aneurysm, aneurysm or without any aneurysm, and patient with a distal aneurysm, including a patient with an aneurysm on the bifurcation. So just looking at the radius, it seems that these are more similar, and these are similar and different from these. So this was just the first observation, so we tried to give a statistical significance to this classification. It's not easy, you see, because this is the radius of L patients and H patients. So they are quite similar, and also the curvature. So we need to perform sophisticated, I was not an expert about statistical techniques, so sophisticated techniques, in some sense, the situation is this. We have a lot of, a cloud of points here, but we are looking with this frame of reference. So this frame of reference is maybe not the most suitable for understanding this cloud of points. So we need to find the right reference, the right origin, the right frame of reference, the principal axis of this cloud of points. So this is what you can get with the so-called principal component analysis, and basically the functional principal component analysis. Principal component analysis means that you find, we consider our all our morphological measures as random processes, as the result of experiments, and we try to identify the eigenvector, or more appropriately, the eigenfunctions, the principal components of these random processes. So what we got, for instance, is that concerning the radius, the first and the second eigenfunction have a statistical role in separating the two classes of patient. And the second eigenfunctions of the curvature have a statistical, was statistically significant in separating the two classes. And this means, just to summarize, that, for instance, we found that the patient in the L classes have an internal carotid artery with a more evident bending, with a higher curvature. They are smaller, and the tapering in internal carotid artery of patients with an aneurysm are less tapered. On the opposite, patients in the H class have a flatter, a less banded carotid artery. It is larger, and it is more tapered than in the other case. So this has a statistical significance, and in particular, healthy patients are in this class. And this is a different representation. We associated to each patient a number, the probability to belong to one or to the other class. And you see here, this is the probability to belong to the blue class, the H class. This is the probability to belong, this is one, this is one. Of course, one is one minus the other. This is the probability to belong to the red class. And you see here some red and blue dots. They are patient. And blue here means that they are really in the H class. So this is the probability we associated. This is the real class. So you can see that the most of the patients are clearly well classified. So this statistical analysis is significant. It's able, it seems that our morphological features have a role with respect to the pathology. Some of them are not well classified, unfortunately. So this could be due to reasons that we, at the moment, we don't know. And more interesting is that some patients are not well classified in the sense that we don't know. Some of them, the empty circle are healthy patients. Some of them have a probability, okay, in the middle, almost one half to belong to a class. So we are not able to understand about these patients. So this is the idea of integrating different research lines. So stem from morphology to hemodynamics using computational fluid dynamics. So, okay, this was a morphological study. Now, what happens if we add computational fluid dynamics? What happens if we add more data coming, stemming from mathematical modeling and numerical simulations? So we used this LIFE-5 code developed, among the others, by Jean-Frédéric. And, of course, in this situation, we have the problem with boundary condition that has been addressed by Anne. So I don't want to give details. Anna already gave details about the Willis circle and 1D models. So in this case, just to mention 1D models, these are simulation of 1D. Okay, these are basically basic equations, not sophisticated as Anne mentioned. And in particular, we use some techniques, approximating technique for the bifurcation. So we use some conservation law with some loss of pressure that in principle should depend on the angles. So these are simulation, but our goal is to couple 3D, 1D in what has been called geometrical multi-scale approach or multi-domain approach. So I will skip these because the details have been already given by Anne. So in principle we have 3D or possible Navier-Stokes equation, then under appropriate assumption, we can downscale the mathematical complexity or dimension to 1D models, basically based on the Euler equations. Euler proposed these equations in Pro Principia Motu Sanguinis Determinando, his famous work. And then we can further downscale the complexity, resorting to Lambert parameters models, where, for instance, the pressure has the role. We can do an analogy with electrical circuits and so on. So the multi-scale framework means, as Anne shown, in coupling all different solvers of the different kind. In some sense, is when you take a picture on Google Earth, you see that where you put your center of the point of interest is well resolved. Of course, it's a stadium because I'm from Italy, so soccer is a religion. But then you have the other details are not so well resolved. So we are coupling with a different level of resolution from the most important part to the other part. In mathematical terms, I want to just to give one slide about what multiscale means in mathematical terms, at least in my perspective. You have a problem in a complex domain that is the domain decomposition, domain splitting approach, trying to simplify, to reduce the computational effort by splitting the problem into sub-domains that if you have a parallel computer, you can solve by exploiting this parallel architecture. But in this case, we want also to downscale the model. So we reduce the original model into a geometrical multi-scale or multi-domain model. In mathematical terms, there are some issues to be addressed when you want to do this kind of, you use this kind of techniques. In particular, if you use an iterative approach for solving these models, you have to solve the more refined model, the 3D Navier-Stokes model, with boundary conditions that in principle are not enough for closing the problem. So you need to complete your boundary condition set, and this is what we called, what has been called by Haywood, Raneker, and Turek, defective boundary condition problem. And then you need to set up appropriate numerical coupling schemes. I want to, originally I was not thinking to say what I'm going to say, but it's been raised by a question by Professor Zamir on Tuesday. So, and is something that I found investigating defective boundary conditions. So, is an application, quite an expected application of defective problems in ultrasound techniques. So, basically, in the direct measure of flow rate, as far as I know, is not possible. You can, with ultrasound, you can measure the maximum velocity, and then in the device is included a formula converting the maximum velocity that can be measured as well as the area into flow rate. But this formula is called Doucette formula, is based on the Poiseuille flow. So basically there is a strong approximation in this formula because in our vascular system, Poiseuille, we never had Poiseuille flow. So we decide to use, so this ultrasound measure for flow rate, not for maximum velocity, for flow rate can be not really accurate. So we use this defective boundary problem technique for devising a new formula where also not only the maximum velocity, but also the Womersley number was included, the Womersley number introduced by Anne. So how can we devise this formula? We use the numerical simulations. Numerical simulations in general have the problem that you need to specify boundary condition. So at the end, you need to specify a velocity profile. So basically, you can change the formula, but there is the same bias as the Poiseuille formula because you are still prescribing a velocity profile. But when we resorted to these defective boundary problem techniques, and in particular, we used the technique proposed by Jean-Frédéric Quarteroni and Formaggia, including the Lagrange multiplier approach, we have been able to do numerical simulations without the prescription of a specific velocity profile. So in this way, we can perform with this Lagrange multiplier approach, we have been able to perform about 200 numerical simulations, like we can do as much as we want numerical simulations, just used for a parameter fitting of a new formula. So we split the Womersley range set into three intervals, collaborating with biomedical engineering, and we found by fitting parameters with these 200 numerical simulations, we found different formulas, including the maximum velocity measured by the ultrasound and the Womersley number that can be measured too, because it's a function of the blood viscosity and the frequency of the heartbeat. So in silico validation, shown very promising results, because we observed that with the parabolic formula, you can have an important error in measuring the flow rate, and our error with our approximate formulas is by far smaller. And then we are, at the moment, we are doing a clinical validation of these formulas. These are the differences. These were data already taken in the Pisa hospital in Italy, but we found that our formula gives different evaluation of the flow rate. So our hope now is that these different evaluations will be able to separate patients with a cardiopathy like these are, with respect to healthy patients. So in such a way that the coronary flow rate could be a more relevant, a more reliable index for separating healthy from pathological patients. Yes?
Can you comment on the dependence of that relationship,
yes,
on where you are in the circulatory system? Because it seems like if you're, like, let's say, right outside the heart of the aorta, maybe this relationship will be different than if you're in a small vessel.
This is accounted in the Womersley number of dependence, basically. Because the Womersley number depends also on the area.
Okay, but I was thinking more of the geometric effect. So let's say, for example, even in the same vessel, let's say the Womersley number is the same as moving along while the vessel is getting tapered, but
yes,
do an entrance effect, even at the same radius.
Okay.
If you're just outside the heart, now the flow is developing, it should depend on somewhat on location. Is this like for a region it works well, like
yes,
the carotid?
Yes.
But
no, it's not only depending on the carotid.
Okay.
It took in different significant morphologies for the parameter fitting. In particular, for these Womersley numbers, we take a coronary artery cast and we perform a simulation there. But of course, we just taken 200 simulation. We can add, we can improve in different ways. So we can include, in particular, here I didn't wrote just W, because in principle you can add more parameters.
This is really interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So in your experience, it's somewhat robust, but we can imagine that there might be regions that. Okay, I see.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
In your next slide, you show an error analysis. Do you compare the numerical simulation with?
Yes, this is on the screen.
Yes, but did you use this numerical simulation in your database of statistical analysis?
I have to mention. We fit our formula with a set of numerical simulations, of course, and these were different simulations with different geometries and different conditions, of course. Yes, yes. Thank you for asking. So let's come back to aneurysm. And these are multi-scale simulations of aneurysm, of course, with Tiziano Passerini and Maria Rita, the Luca here. And with this geometrical multiscale approach, yes, in biomedical engineering, that is a different approach for managing the problem of boundary condition is to add some fictitious part of the boundary, what they call flow extension, to your domain. So in such a way, the effect of the boundary, the wrong or not really correct boundary condition are far away from the region of interest. The drawback in this approach is that in this way, you have to pay more because you have a larger computational domain. So this multi-scale approach is able to get this similar results, but with the, in principle, lower computational cost. So I will skip. This is a little bit technical about some recent application of multi-scale, but I think it's too late and it's Friday. So what happened when we add CFD analysis to our morphological analysis? So for instance, we got patients number 43 and 49, that they are correctly estimated to be in the H class, and patient 8 and 14 correctly estimated to be in the low class. And we computed the blood flow inside this patient, and in particular, this is a systolic peak. This is our Walshier stress maps of this patient. And then this is another patient, patient number 49. And when we compared the four patients, we found that the average in time on the heartbeat Walshier stress in the two patients is really different. In particular, it's higher for patients in the low class, in the class with the aneurysm in the carotid artery or without any aneurysm. So this could be another significant landmark for understanding what happens with, and in particular, relations with the aneurysm. But okay, if we use this landmark, what happens with patients that are unclear? So in particular, patient 52 has an estimated probability 0.7, which is close to one half to belong to H class. Actually, he belongs to H class. But it is not well classified, clearly classified by morphological analysis. So what happened when we had new data coming from numerical simulation? And we were very happy. Now we are validating on more test cases, on more patients, but we are getting the same results. We found that Walshier stress is clearly below the threshold we identified on the clear, on the well-defined patient. So it seems that if we add the CFD, we can improve our classification of the patient. We tried with other landmarks coming from CFD, for instance, the so-called elicity factor, which is more or less a measure of vorticity in the carotid, but it seems not statistically significant in separating the different patients. So jump to some future works concerning aneurysm. We want to improve our statistical analysis, in particular to add more morphological data and to find a straight correlation with rupture. We are also working for including fluid structure interaction, but we need appropriate models for the aneurysmatic wall. In particular, we are trying to include the model proposed by Gulandana and Yang. And then there is an issue that yesterday could be introduced. I forgot to introduce, but I do now. Multiscaling time. I think that multiscaling time is an important issue to deal with in trying to collaborate mathematician with biology person, because we are looking at phenomena that have like the development of a pathology over the time scale of weeks or months or even year. But the basic effects happens at the level of heartbeat, so a few seconds or a fraction of a second. How can we model, mathematically speaking, these two different time scales, and how can we couple the two different time scales? I don't know. So I hope that maybe Char could be give some answer, but I think that this is an issue that should be addressed in trying to establishing more stronger collaboration in this stuff. Then we are going to extend this integration of different lines, as I've shown in the with the Emory cardiac toolbox for analyzing the connection between electrical contraction and mechanical contraction in the heart. These are a few conclusions that are not strictly related to aneurysm, but are more general. I think that the images are a source of data that are not only what you can see. There are a lot of data hidden in the images. And we can retrieve this data by resorting to statistics, by comparing with other patients, and by resorting to modeling and computing. So I think that if in 1895, after Röntgen with this first image, put a revolution in the medical, in the clinical practice, maybe now it's time to put another revolution thanks to mathematics. Integrating image analysis, statistics, and scientific computing, because we can get a lot of more data from the images, and I hope that this could enter into the clinical practice. So maybe I'm dreaming, but I'm not sure that I'm completely out of reality if I say that maybe in the future we will have something the same. For example, you have a blood test, a CT, and maybe a numerical simulation. Okay. Thank you. We are close to Hollywood, so this is a way I have knowledge of the people in like at the end of the movie. So this is Susanna Bacigalupi, Edoardo Boccardi, are medical doctors in Niguarda. Pier Cesare Secchi, Simone Vantini, Laura Sangalli are the statistical part of the group at the MOX. Tiziano Passerini is the our life five guy working on the numerical simulation. Stefania Bella, Maria Rita De Luca, Marina Piccinelli, Luca Antiga are in the vascular modeling toolkit team. And of course, Siemens Medical Solutions has supported this work. Thank you.